Hello, and welcome to Why Wars Happened, a weekly history podcast where we talk about what led to war in history. I'm your host, Emily Ross, and today we're going to be discussing the things that led to the American Revolution, with a focus on Virginia this season. Okay, so where we left off in the last episode was that King James had taken Virginia from the Virginia Company. Virginia was no longer owned by a company. It was now a royal colony. The king had complete control over it. The colonists in Virginia mostly wanted to be safe, fed, and free to make money from their hard work. They wanted to live their lives while keeping their English-born rights, rights that the English king had promised them they would keep in Virginia, just as though they were in England itself. James had wanted to have direct control of the colony for a long time. The starving in the early days, the sickness, and the massacre of 1622 were just kind of excuses for him to finally make a legal argument for why he could cancel his agreement with the Virginia Company to let the company run the colony. James wanted it for himself. Remember that the government in Virginia still had to answer to a powerful council in England, and that powerful council in England still had to answer to the king. But when the Virginia Company was in charge, he didn't have a lot of say in the day-to-day things, and a lot of the money that was being made was going to the Virginia Company and not to the king. The company had taken a little bit of money out of every sale that was made from the colonies. The king got some of that money too, but he wanted more. He needed more. He was still in massive debt. The massacre of 1622 was his opportunity to cut the company out. Now that he had won his battle in court, he would have more of a say in the day-to-day things that happened in the colony, and he would get all of that sweet, sweet money. Okay, so now remember that group of men the king had sent over to Virginia to investigate and gather evidence of all the terrible suffering? The evidence had been used to prove in court that the Virginia Company was to blame for everything that went wrong and should lose their ownership of the colony. The Virginia Company had made a small mistake in the paperwork it gave to the court, and so they lost their case and the king won. It was 1624, 2 years after the massacre, and now the king owned Virginia as a royal colony. When this happened, the group of men that the king had sent over was still there in Virginia. They told the assembly, which was the government in Virginia, to write a letter to the king telling him how grateful they were to have his royal protection and care. This they did. However, they also told the king that his reasons for taking over the colony, the sickness, the attacks from the natives, and the poor living conditions were all untrue. It was all misinformation. They told him that the leader of the Virginia Company had been nothing but awesome and totally amazing. After they wrote this letter, they sent private letters directly to the king without showing them to the king's group of men. They knew that the group of men was there for one thing and one thing only, to make the Virginia Company look bad. But since the colonists didn't feel that the company was bad, they wanted to make sure the king knew the company wasn't the evil thing that the group of men were probably telling him it was. They didn't trust that the group of men would give the king those letters. I mean, the letters made the group look like they didn't know what they were doing. And by saying good things about the company, the letters were doing the opposite of what the group's purpose was. But in an act of betrayal, one of the assembly members gave copies of the letters to the king's men. The assembly was so outraged by this betrayal that they sentenced the assembly member who betrayed them to stand in the stocks and have his ears nailed to a board behind his head. And after that was done, his ears were to be cut off. The group of men reported this to the king, calling it a bloody and barbarous act. In response, James flew into a rage and made plans to immediately take over the colony. He set up another, larger group of men in Virginia who were to meet once every week to discuss exactly how to run the colony. The new group did meet, but the new plan didn't make any mention of an assembly or a government. After all, as we talked about in previous episodes, James strongly believed that kings got their power from God and that the government was answerable to the king. Its place was beneath him. The colony wouldn't do things he didn't approve of, and he didn't approve of democracy. Even so, the king wasn't stupid. The kings of England had a long history of revolts and overthrowings of kings and queens that the people rebelled against. In fact, he didn't know it, but his son would be the first and only king to ever be executed by England, and his grandson would be run off the throne. Okay, back to this point in time. The king was going to control Virginia, but he wanted to prevent rebellions if he could. So, as the first royal governor of Virginia, he chose one of the old governors that the colonists already knew and liked, Sir Francis Wyatt. He also allowed the governor to keep some of the same council members around him to advise him on things. This made a smooth transition since it was familiar faces at the head of things, and it also helped the colonists feel like a harsh, tyrannical government wasn't coming in to stomp on them. More fortunate for them was the death of James just 3 years later. His son, Charles I, became king. Charles didn't have the same tensions with the assembly in Virginia that his father did. Charles also didn't have the same strong belief in government serving beneath him. He did believe that the government's place was beneath him, but he believed it less strongly than his father did. He got rid of the king's group of men in Virginia and instead set up a small group, a council in England, to take care of the things involving Virginia. This was much like the powerful council in England before, but it was now controlled by the king without any input from a private company. Charles even consulted the former hated enemy of his father, Edwin Sands, who his father had imprisoned. Sands had been in charge of the Virginia Company, and he also ran that powerful council in England. He hated the idea of a king, and he was extremely pro-democracy. But Charles still wanted his opinion about the best way to govern Virginia. Sands gave his opinions to the king, but in the end, Charles rejected the advice. He believed that his father had been right. Virginia didn't need to be run by a company. He allowed Sir Francis Wyatt to remain as the colony's governor, but made no mention of an elected body of representatives in Virginia, and the power to write laws for the colony remained with the council in England, the king, and the governor of Virginia. The governor had a council to advise him, and he had to answer to the council in England and to the king, but other than that, he was all-powerful. This could have ended in complete tyranny with the wrong person in the job. However, the colony was saved by the democratic nature of Governor Wyatt. He had the power to issue laws, just like the king and the council in England did, but he didn't abuse this power. Instead, he knew that the colonists needed representatives making those laws, with the colonists' approval. He knew that there was no legal right to an assembly or any elections there, and that even if he gathered all of the former assembly members, any laws they made wouldn't be legal. He and his council wrote to the council in England again and again, pleading with them to re-establish the elections and the assembly, but the council didn't approve. So he did the only thing he could think of to preserve democracy in Virginia. He gathered leading colonists and held meetings with them to discuss the things in the colony that needed attention. Those colonial leaders took the concerns of the people and brought them to the meetings with the governor and his council. Together, they wrote letters to the council in England. In this way, the colonists had some voice in their government. It wasn't until 1627, 3 years after becoming a royal colony, that Charles finally gave in and allowed the colonists to hold elections again and establish an assembly. The king didn't hate democracy as much as his father did, but he also didn't love it. He didn't grant the colonists permission to hold elections simply because he wanted democracy to rule them. He did it because he really super bad wanted the colonists to give him something in return. He wanted their tobacco. All of it. He wanted them to grow it, pull it from the ground, put it all together, and sell it to the ships heading to Europe, just like it had always been. But he wanted 100% of the profits. He wanted to own all of it, and the colonists would be like employees of his. So the colonists could have their democracy, they could have representation back. All they had to do was give the king ownership of all of their tobacco. If they refused, they would lose their chance at democracy. That's a pretty big deal. But being Englishmen, they knew they already had the right to representation. They were English citizens. They would fight to gain democracy in another way. So they refused this deal with the king. They did offer to negotiate with the king. Perhaps he could have all of their tobacco if the king would give them even more democracy and rights than they already had. Charles rejected this offer. Even though he rejected their offer, he allowed the elections to be reestablished anyways. On top of this, Governor Wyatt stepped down as governor, and Charles chose another man already familiar to the colonists. This was George Yeardley. The colonists loved Yeardley as much as they had loved Governor Wyatt. Things were going great for Virginia. George Yeardley had been the governor in Virginia when the company owned the colony. Yeardley had been the one the company sent over with the charter establishing elections for the first time. They associated freedom and democracy with George Yeardley, and Yeardley had been good to them. King Charles was a good king to the colonists. Sadly, George Yeardley died the year after arriving in Virginia. A man named Francis West stepped in as governor for a bit, but he soon returned to England, and the colony was once again in need of a governor. While they waited, a man named John Potts sat as governor. He was born in Virginia and was a doctor, inventor, and all-around genius. He was also a kind of sadistic guy who had poisoned natives during the wars. He was said to have enjoyed the company of those who were below him in station, whom he supplied with alcohol and conversation. The next year, the actual governor that would rule over the colony arrived in Virginia. This man is one to remember. His name was John Harvey, and he was one of the worst things to ever happen to colonial Virginia. He was cruel, he was a tyrant, and in the end, he got his just deserts. But not before enacting terror in the colony and injustice on all who opposed him. He didn't like being limited in power by the council in England. He probably didn't even like being ruled by the king. From his first day in Virginia, he made it clear to the colonists that he was the master of the land and all would bow before him. He would reward you if he liked you and punish you if he didn't. The governor and his council controlled the colonial courts. He could make juries and judges rule however he wanted in any trial or criminal matter. He could issue laws, and he was only stoppable by the council in England and the king. That is, if they heard about his evil doings. Governor Harvey not only had the power to do these things, he used it, without mercy. This made the governor's council even more afraid to oppose him. The members on the council had always been chosen by the governor or the king, and therefore had always been loyal to the governor. Now, they dared not be anything other than super-duper ultra-mega-loyal to him, or they could find themselves with their homes taken from them and their bodies at the end of a noose. Soon, the colonists were in open hostility to the governor. They claimed that the governor couldn't do anything without their consent. Remember, the charter from James had promised them the same rights as all Englishmen as though the colonists were on English soil itself. Even without the charter, the colonists still had this right. They were still Englishmen, and they still had the same right as all Englishmen to be represented by elected officials. Who did this governor think he was? Didn't he know of the hundreds and hundreds of years of rebellion against those who had absolute power in English history? Well, if Governor Harvey hadn't heard of that part of English history, he was about to learn it firsthand. The colonists soon entered into a policy of obstruction against the governor. That's all for today. Thanks for tuning in. Join us next week when we discuss just how far Governor Harvey would take his power and the mutiny that followed. Subscribe so you don't miss the next episode and comment your thoughts on this episode below. See you next time on Why Wars Happened.